the mission Rama and Sixto Jose Paz Wells. This is another case of contact similar to that of Professor Hernandez, but in this case the contacts are still going on, and they involve more than one contactee. Sixto Jose is the second son of Senior Jose Carlos Paz Garcia Goro Chano, also of GMA, who is recognized as one of the world's foremost leaders in the investigation and study of UFOs. Carlos Paz Garcia, when he was 27 years old, and recovering from a motorcycle accident that disfigured him for life, discovered for himself a new concept of religion and man's relationship to deity. He became interested in the stars and participated in the formation of the Asociación Peruana de Astronomía, and was their first secretary, treasurer. In this capacity Carlos Paz learned of the UFO reports being made at that time, 1952, and as they fit very well into his new concepts of deity and our relationship to it. And into his new interest, astronomy, he soon became a focal point of contact, as a collector of such reports, and rapidly became recognized as a senior expert on the subject. As the Astron Association was composed of scientists, all well established in their fields, they did not want to accept the introduction of studies or investigations that they could not seriously support, and specifically, they rejected the UFOs. For that reason, upon not finding a favorable climate for the development of it which, from the first reports, became his primary interest, to study the possibility of intelligent beings come from other worlds to visit us, he separated himself from the Astronomy Association, and on the 31st of January 1955 founded the Instituto Peruano de Relaciones Interplanetarias, IPRI. Jose Carlos recognized not only the possibility being demonstrated of the existence of real extraterrestrial beings, but also the real possibility of imminent contact with them. Carlos Paz Garcia, his life changed by circumstances, became a mature respectable man, and being guided by the idea of visitations to Earth thought, if man should discover that he was not alone, that there is a universe of possibilities, of existences both superior and inferior to his own, with diverse and distant processes, if perhaps he could demonstrate this and come to believe the conditions that predispose a contact with them, could it be realized? He withstood the jokes and the scorn, and even some threats, as well as the intolerance by inquisitive minds that took refuge in schemes and prejudice for fear of having to accept the fact that each day was begun anew from zero, and that the dreams and visions of the present are in truth the reality of the future. For certainly we knew very little, but we could learn by searching, and we must give ourselves the opportunity. Sixto Jose Paz Wells grew up in that kind of receptive climate, which did not train new ideas out of him, and he simply did not accept impossibilities. He kept an open mind and he sought answers for himself. He questioned the dogmas of his own religion, and began to study others, including several of the world's great religions. He studied other belief systems including the Rosicrucians and the Theosophists, finding more comfort in their more scientific approach to man's relationship to the All, than in anything else he had encountered so far. Sixto Jose, after months of studying the ideas of the so-called New Age metaphysics, learned to meditate properly, and then began to receive automatic writing. He had been studying important UFO contacts in his father's files, and sought to get information from his writer on this exotic phenomenon. His writer said that he was an extraterrestrial entity and that he was communicating from his ship in space. Sixto Jose took a couple of his closest friends and his mother in on his secret and they watched him receive his communications, in a different hand and at a different speed from his own normal writing. The profoundness of the contacts and the content of the messages increased, and the participants began to ask questions of the unseen writer. They got immediate answers, and of course the question of a proof of what was said to be going on was sought. Finally the writer consented to a small demonstration, to be strictly limited to the participants alone and in the greatest confidence. Nobody else was to know. The writer quickly wrote, "Go to 60 kilometers south of Lima, on 7 February, but only those who are here now, and at 9 at night you will see us, and this will confirm the contact as real and necessary. The exact location for the contact was pictured in Sixto's mind. They began making preparations to carry out this meeting, though at this time not even Sixto was sure it would happen. The place selected for the contact that would confirm the communication was a declivity between ridges in a desert zone, typical of the coast of Peru, where still could be seen the remains of an irrigation canal when that region, in the past, received water from the torrents of the Sierra, which with the climactic changes suffered, has been totally extinguished. Nearby is a small town in an abandoned state called Papaleon 13, a place which would serve us as a headquarters for our later trips, and there lived one of the members of that first group, Juana Savo, a student in the Programa de Arquitectura de la Universidad Ricardo Palma of Lima. His mother would always help us with much love and enthusiasm all the times we would come to her well-cared-for field house, near the sea. The nights in the Peruvian desert are cold and silent, characteristics which seemed to amplify our anxiety that grew with the slow passage of the hours. As we had arrived the day before, that indicated for the experience, we took the night to advance as much as possible, trying to penetrate the desert by the antique road that ascended the mountains towards Santo Domingo de los Oleros, exploring for the first time that zone. With our knapsacks on our backs, we began our walk. The air was fresh and we made good fortune, but our inexperience in camping resulted in having overloaded our knapsacks beyond what we could carry, for which the enthusiasm soon gave way to exhaustion, which ended by making us fall over the large stones of the dry wash of the old river. We remained in that gully until morning, resting and sleeping a little. With the first light of dawn we awoke and, after eating something, resumed our march. Farther on we saw a stop truck, fishing tuna that abounded there. Massa Avenue Tunfisk, we asked them if they would give us a lift, to which the driver agreed. We advanced considerably that morning with the help of that transport. When we stopped, we bid goodbye to the truck driver who returned to Chilca. We advanced up a creek bed where Mito, Charlie, Sixto's brother, and Juan raised the tents, fighting the wind that commenced to blow that morning. We went up to the top of a hill where we all sat down to talk about the reason we were there and the importance of all of us being able to come to confirm the demonstration. From our place there, we could see the whole valley extended before our rise, but in the meantime, as the hours were passing, the temperature continued rising and we used up the little water that in our imprevision we had carried. There was nothing to give us shade in that desert outcrop except the tents, but we could not spend much time in them because they were hotter inside. We decided we had to get some water, for which the four of us split up, taking our canteens with us. We had not walked a kilometer under the implacable sun in that place, when we came upon a solitary tree in the middle of the desert. We ran to it to rest ourselves in its shade and found that we had to share its benefits with a hive of wasps. We quickly removed ourselves from there, doing ourselves a favor in the process, because some 50 meters farther on, we came upon some vines of Italian grapes, with edible bunches. What was this? Grapes in the middle of nowhere? Later we came to understand that in season they accumulated a good quantity of water that came down in the dry wash there, that we had been walking in farther back. This was for us a miracle. We picked as much as we could carry and took them back, feasting until we were full. About that time the morning wind came up and broke down the tents, leaving us without shelter for the night. With this our spirit for adventure went down, which had already deteriorated considerably from the excessive heat and the tiredness of the night before. We decided to return with all our things to Papaleon 13 and wait there in its surroundings for the supposed sighting. We had no more than finished packing up our camp when, surprisingly, a truck from the army came by, going down the dry wash in the direction of Chilca. We stopped it with signals and accepted a lift. We got aboard with the soldiers who had been shooting in the upper zones. From Chilca we went to Papaleon to the Juana Savo's house and refreshed ourselves in preparation for the night. The nocturnal vigil began with a cold refreshment served lovingly by Wan's mother, and we took the opportunity to discuss the situation. The general idea was, don't wait for anything. Certainly the great majority was sure of what would happen, or better said, that nothing would happen. But all of them were not concerned about the group, since they had taken this trip as an outing, and at the time, a hallucinant adventure. Among all those present, I considered myself among the most skeptical. I continued rejecting inside of me the ease with which all this had been given. Contact with extraterrestrials through people as simple as us could not be a fact. It was easier for me to think that all was responding to my own imagination, or perhaps to some jokester entity. When the hour indicated in the communication approached, our spirits seemed to become irritated. Guillermo Duff, a college friend who was present, came to me to communicate his impression of that trip, saying that we were wasting time, because according to the probabilities, nothing out of the ordinary would happen that night, unless we confused ourselves with a star, some meteor, or even a satellite, with the expected sighting of a UFO. And he said to me that he sincerely thought that all was a product of some trick perpetrated by me in combination with some other group. I responded by trying to convince him until I was tired, that we must wait since it already lacked so little we would all be out of doubt. I heard talk among the group making reference to very ancient men who in the past had also been selected by the then called gods or angels, that such appeared in various sacred books and legends, that those selected were simple men, but with something in common, which made them overleap the rest, and that we should not wait to discover and to evaluate. We lacked scarcely minutes to the hour fixed for the confirmation of the messages. Anxiety in some had reached its maximum, while in others it was the pessimism that gained more and more ground. Doubt also grew, and together with that a desire to hide then all that was true. We were conscious of the limitations in groups as well as personalities, which distanced us from the optimum conditions that we supposed necessary for anything to happen. But though we were in the middle of the desert in the full night of Saturday when we could have been doing other things, passing the time well in a movie or some party, we were not much surprised when, from behind a hill, that did not reach much more than 100 meters of height, there slowly emerged a silver light that we at first took for the moon. It was exactly 9 p.m. and the light finished coming from its hiding place, illuminating only the place where we were as if like day. It was approaching the group slowly, allowing us to appreciate its hamburger-shaped form. At both sides of the great metallic object, orange, blue and yellow lights pulsed on and off on what seemed like stabilizers, because little by little the ship was coming to a stop scarcely 80 meters above us. In the upper part of the discoid apparatus, a half dozen windows could be clearly distinguished. Some could even see silhouettes of people in them. The heat that radiated from the apparatus was tremendous. Among us were some who could not believe what they were seeing and did not stop rubbing their eyes, and more than one came to ask that their arm be pinched to be sure that they were not dreaming this. It was at that moment that Mito rushed over to me begging me almost hysterically that I communicate with them and tell them to go away, that all of us were terrified. I also felt an uncontrollable fear, but this was not as much as the disorder in which I found myself submerged due to having succeeded in the unimaginable, as if to say, that which was not within the frame of possibilities, I thought, now was. All had been real. Contact truly existed and it had been just so simple. The insistence of all that I communicate with the ship, decided me to sit down and try to get into communication through pencil and paper, in the accustomed manner, which was psychographically. The answer did not have to wait despite my nervousness, and this is what was said: we will not descend at this time because you do not control your emotions. Make preparation, a time and a place. The message coincided with what had been received by the majority mentally. Without taking our eyes from the ship, which continued the interchange of lights, as if wanting to communicate their total control of this situation, with our flashlights which had totally discharges in minutes, losing energy, we opted to comment on what we felt at time, and what we were seeing, to diminish the fear and to assure ourselves of the sighting. The ship remained above us for 15 minutes until it began to rotate upon its axis and at great velocity headed straight toward the ocean, where later they revealed to us the existence of a submarine base, specifically in front of the beaches of Leon Dormido and Puerto Jo, kilometers 80 and 82 on the Pan-American Highway South. After we lost sight of it, several moments passed before we began to react, appreciating in full the dimension and importance of what had occurred. The return was triumphal for the others, who could not contain their glee, but I felt emotional and exhausted by the tension that had overcome me minutes before all that was seen, and after for the confirmation so evident and so impressive. All that mixture of fear and happiness made me think during the return to the house. I felt overwhelmed by the responsibility that I still did not understand, knowing that this irremediably released the present and future happenings, for which I could not share in the shouts of jubilation of some and the smiles of the rest. The following day, at breakfast, we informed our parents of the transcendence of the happenings. My father listened respectfully, but we knew that in him there was a prejudice, already for us the first disappointment, that he took this as a joke against his person and also for the fact that he did not want to believe his own sons or other young person, without the experience and knowledge necessary, which he judged indispensable, could develop and maintain any type of contact with those beings in which he believed, and to which he had dedicated a great part of his life as an investigator. There was then a delicate problem of our own love and pride, but what my father and all the other serious investigators of the phenomenon had not foreseen, was that independently of a complete preparation or capacity for the contact, that, in the ultimate instance it is supposedly at the will of the extraterrestrials, who under a planned system of selection, determine whom they will select, who fulfills the requirements that they consider indispensable for the mission together with them. For my father, not only was our contact little probable, but it was taken as a fantasy, that to have reality would make him understand that nothing had been valid of the long years of energy devoted which at the first opportunity had been left aside. Doubt had been sown inside him, but he did not think of the fact that without his work preparing the road, the contact with us never could have come to reality. Without wanting it, he had been the useful instrument and had to continue being it, above all disinterest, which constitutes the key to spiritual progress. As the disinterest of my father persisted, we waited for the arrival of the habitual hour to receive communications, more or less 9 p.m., to consult the guides on what we could do to convince him. Their answer was somewhat long for our intended question, but at the same time it denoted sincerity and said, "You must not seek to convince anybody, least of all your parents. The experiences and confirmations are given only to those that with an open mind and with the humility necessary, present themselves or arrive where you are, disposed to compromise within yourselves, because you already believe in this and are at an evolving age, an age of learning, and such only await the call alone. Be conscious that you do not expect a faith weak in the labor of development, less still in us or in our existence, to not have such importance, since our presence is an evident and demonstrable reality. You must try to meet people that, how to find the basic aspect, the reason for our apparition over the planet and can understand it without preconceptor. You need people young in spirit who believe they can begin each day anew, from zero if necessary, people who are disposed to undo all that went before and to re-inseminate their life, the priorities of existence and the true value of things, people who know how to distinguish the reflections from the realities and who living in the world, do not pertain to it nor share in its corruption. That not look for the quantity of people, but the quality of the persons. As we toast your friendship, we know how to correspond, cheerfully sharing our responsibility for developing the mission of orientation of your humanity as well as to assure you of our aid and support in front of the difficulties that can be presented. Finally, we knows that the mission will fall totally upon the human, because this is your plane of evolution and you must evolve with it and be responsible for it. Being true to you, our brothers, to your time we allocate the means of transport, because you will be removed from the face of the earth, but of course we will give you guidelines for preparation. With love, Oaksuk. Despite the content of the message, we insisted to the guides on asking for some kind of confirmation for our father, to which, with much patience, they accepted to giving us a sighting. Oksa indicated the following Saturday, the 14th of February 1974, as the date for the trip to Chilka, to where we must go with him, but without anybody else. Upon informing our father of what they had said, he mentioned the great illusion that they represented to us. However, after thinking about it, he accepted the offer to go, but he told us that we ought to go on ahead because, with the details they had given us about the place, he would know how to get there before the time set. Upon arriving at the accustomed place, we went up onto the riggerline where we could see a long stretch of the access road to that place. The site was solitary desert, an adequate frame of reference for an extraterrestrial contact. It was 6:45 p.m. when, as they had assured us, they arrived. Seven people made up our small advance group, and all of us noticed the apparition above our heads of two ships of discoid form, of at least 15 meters diameter each, with orange and blue lights flashing. Our watches marked the hour as exactly 7 p.m. when, in the distance, on the dirt road, we saw the lights of an automobile. We jumped with excitement upon seeing that all was being accomplished exactly as we hoped for the occasion. Even more, there was no end to our excitement when over our shoulders there appeared a mother ship or support craft, which act as ambulant aerial bases, which was at least 150 meters long, with white lights along the sides. Set in Bilder? Our emotion was suddenly interrupted upon seeing that on the road where my father was supposed to be coming we could now see the lights of more than one auto. Fearing that all would be thrown to a loss, Mito and I ran down the hill to confront the unexpected intruders. We had not even come to the wash when we could see in our surroundings, at least some 10 parked automobiles and a great number of strange people who had gotten out of them to install themselves comfortably in tents, and with tables and folding seats, to await a spectacle. Others still had not finished setting up their telescopes and cleaning their binoculars, as well as other accessories. But who were all those inopportune curiosity seekers, and where was our father? Suddenly, in the middle of the bellicose and disordered crowd, he appeared. He looked completely happy, with a complacent smile, which abruptly disappeared when he found himself in front of us and saw the expression on our faces. Our looks never could have been more demonstrative of our indignation at the deception that we felt. He immediately lowered his head and, as if looking for an excuse, argued rapidly that not only had he not believed in the contact, but that he had also permitted the invitation of all the people of the IPRI for that excursion, that he qualified underestimating it as a simple trip. He was quickly taken up and absorbed by the members of the Institute, like bees on honey, as they surrounded him. We left my father, giving a last look at the encampment. It certainly was incredible to see how the meeting was being cheapened. There were already those around a table who had grabbed space and, taking pen in hand, in a state of trance, were trying to establish contact of a mediumistic character. Others, incapable of controlling their habits, which had followed them even here, were celebrating the free night air, but instead of disintoxicating themselves from the city and perhaps contemplating the stars, preferred to drink their fill from cases of bottles of beer that were stacked beside the tents, where others could be found in full romance. We did not know what to do. At the one hand we felt indignation, but on the other we wanted to overcome the shame that we felt weighing on us for our impotence in not being able to express our frustration. All of this had made us forget that still above the mountain could be found the three ships, and upon turning the sight to see if they were still there, the two smaller ones descended rapidly below the mountain toward the dry wash that opened into the valley, passing so low above the people, that it produced a general rush to escape, overturning tables and knocking many bottles to the ground, and burying many people within the tents. The ships made a right-angle turn and descended at great velocity above the heads of all, and opening up in such a way that one went toward the north and the other to the south. After that there followed seconds of total silence, which was interrupted by a harsh-sounding noise, like a reactor, as well as a loud buzz. It was the gigantic mothership which from its stationary place was making continuous changes in the color tones of its lights, and which slowly began changing its position, being initially tilted towards the left. It finally became horizontal and then turned on itself, placing the point in position and headed toward the southeast, slowly, but with increasing speed, then passing a scarce 400 meters above the encampment. Up to this moment, dozens of the people of IPRI had been following the movements and found themselves astonished by the strange spectacle of which they had been witnesses. My father did not cease looking for us, but it was late and we had begun our return back up the mountain. Upon rejoining the rest of the young men of the contact group, we tried to console ourselves over the uneasiness that lay over us. We had made the mistake. It was not our father who had failed, but ourselves, who had wanted to force things, imposing our truth, demanding too much of the growing friendship with the guides. Thus we began to assimilate our errors and to seek the approval of them, which in essence was the experience that brought us closer to the correct form. Without this justification, the errors had been a sign along our road, since in committing errors, one realizes one advances. It is not the same when one is immobile or remains observing the disinvolvement of others. The danger is not found in committing them, but in remaining too long in error, since the longer one remains in error, the more difficult it will be to overcome such condition. The course many times seems confusing, full of mists like in a blindness, and we have to immerse ourselves many times, until we come to see the light of day, but if we remain in this condition, we may lose ourselves irremediably. So much time we have tried to progress in our search, the tests and the errors become ever more demanding, because the falls are from ever greater heights. The only thing that helps us to overcome them, is the humility to accept them, recognize them, and the force of will to overcome and conquer. We remain thus, alone, on the crest of the ridge, in the midst of the overwhelming solitude of the desert, without any animating capacity to receive any communication to clarify how much more we had been mistaken. The messages we were receiving at this stage of the contacts consisted of a good quantity of instructions, some history and some predictions. They were of such interest that we began to file them in a folder as an archive of communications. Some of the young men of the group had the foresight to make copies of the more valuable of the communications, thus preserving at least those when the file was stolen. In this case there was more than one receiver of the communications and so they were never all in one place, another fortunate event that reduced the extent of the loss. In fact, this multi-channel reception was one thing that characterized these contacts and made them different from all others. The first theme that they embraced, in partial form, perhaps because we had not given it at that time the importance necessary, or perhaps we were not prepared to understand and overcome such knowledge, was that of the catastrophe that hung potentially over the earth. Here is when many of us reflected on whether fatalism and the collective subconscious was what created such thoughts, predisposing such disasters, but this pessimistic version of the destiny of humanity matured in the measure of time which secured the bonds with the guides, confirming the feel of their presence and the voice of warning represented by the contacts. It is now when we know that the great catastrophe, which they describe, is something announced by an innumerable number of revelations and prophecies in all of the religions and beliefs, and in some is synonymous with the great test, a final selection and at the same time the step to a necessary and favorable purgatory change to an era of peace and progress. The catastrophe is the commonly called judgment of the nations of which Christianity makes reference in the Evangels and the Apocalypse of Saint John. According to the extraterrestrial civilizations that have been observing us since the appearance of man on the face of the earth, the planet is a plane of evolution, subject to a vicious circle, in which has existed for millions of years, a multiplicity of civilizations which reached as much or more development than the present one, and which destroyed itself due to its arrogance and egotism, which came to produce in them a loss of spiritual values and in turn a cult of slavery to material things through a science divorced from humanism. The guides have manifestly shown that man, once more, in the present, finds himself confronting the possibility of advancing or disappearing as such from the equation. And it is here that we remember the message of hope when faced with the end of the world, that it will bring our humanity to a sincere change. Do we not have at present a chance that the change will not be imposed, that what could guarantee the evolution is the correct and voluntary use of free will toward evolution, without force or threat, for the best intentions that exist? The extraterrestrial presence certainly is the final warning before a series of happenings that could produce an acceleration of the process of transit, in which the Earth finds itself, which, instead of destroying itself, would bring it toward a transformation, at a cost of a partial destruction of its population and civilization, as a purgation that stimulates a reorientation. All of this will occur, according to what they have said, in an imprecise time soon, so close that you will not be able to stop it when you see it coming. Oaksuk. The changes on the planet will obtain when this world enters a state of transition toward the fourth dimension, and the circumstances that hurry this change are possibly a comet or an asteroid striking the Earth, producing changes in the electromagnetic field, detonating the atomic material found activated in their storage, and bringing destruction and contamination upon the same countries that created them. The chain reaction may leave only one part of the world survivable, and that could be the central zone of South America. The vicious circle will finally be broken because the remnant of humanity that remains, that previously had been extracted from the face of the Earth, will be well-trained and prepared to overcome the adversities and the errors committed. Great mother ships are placed at the disposition of the terrestrial travelers, who in complete families and in large numbers will receive help and support from their superior brothers to preserve the human genus, selecting as points of descent and embarkation, those places indicated from ancient times, such as Nazca, for example. It may not be then, as man fears, that all will be a product of a Third World War. Even today, neutral lands are free through arrangements that reduce the local control by the great powers that intervene in covert or overt form. It is ever more probable that such could come about through a computer signal, that all could be the product of an unforeseen accident, due to the stress of political tension in the hands of the military, provoked by the ones who mistakenly tell them to use such energy. Certainly those events will come when the environment has reached the maximum of degeneration and has lost all moral values, which, without being prophets, we can see at simple sight is not far away. Already the order is allegoism, destabilization and destruction, which governs our civilization. Actually the demographic explosion and its consequent problems are interpreted by the extraterrestrial minds as a reply by the universe before the moment of evaluation that passes through the Earth and becomes a springboard in evolution, for which many beings with a potential for revolution, who belong to other planets also in the third dimension, are now being sent to this one, incarnating here to take advantage of the opportunity to transcend to the fourth dimension, embodying the test of man. In this manner are released such persons as those who have no identification with any epoch of the history of this world. When some undertake such exercises in regressive reincarnation, there emerge details of which one is completely unaware, to his knowledge. Many then do not pertain to the cycle of incarnations of this planet, but all learn the precise moment when it becomes favorable for one of them to undertake the test of change and evolution. But is it perhaps the help and protection promised by the ships of space that guarantee that later we will not relapse into our errors of the past? We do not have much assurance that man will come to attain a state of consciousness that will allow him to evaluate and overcome the experience of his whole past. This change of attitude toward life is not acquired as easily if we continue living in the anti-love state that is egoism, since this is against our own nature. Man is a social being, fulfilled in society through human relations ever more humane, by which he partakes of and gives to it, accomplishing the execution of the cosmic plan that exists over him, and in which he is assigned a singular place in the harmonious disposition of the universe. To deny this is to deny our own essence. Is it, perhaps, that by observing the example they set for us, we can achieve such needed change? Perhaps with the good example before us we may advance some. But, how long will it last? They will have to go on their way, and with their departure will we return to our old ways, as has already happened in other epochs. The only form of assurance that man can overcome his debilities and assume his great moment, is to help him and to make the knowledge accessible to him. Only the truth can set man free. But fear and insecurity exist for those who hide in the corner. Unequal riches and wars are due to the uncertainty and fears, that are nothing more than ignorance and lack of identification with the power of the will and the mental and spiritual essence of life. It is this aspect which we have to go deeper into from now on, as the reception of knowledge and perception of the truth, is a great part of the feeling of the experience lived. The messages that followed that of the catastrophe, made us permanently aware that we must prepare to disseminate what was happening to us. All of this we received with great respect, despite our not understanding anything of what they were telling us, not even when they referred to that of a preparation. The trips and the meetings now in middle March, were by invitation of the guides, and for this there was a secluded place, already discovered beforehand in the meeting with IPRI when we followed the route of one of the ships that went to the north. This place we called the mine, for its having served before as a quarry. It was sufficiently hospitable, being between low hills that gave it some isolation without being very far from the road. In this place we could hear a strange and persistent hum with a peculiar clarity. We consulted concerning this place and decided it would be propitious for our work, and we always came to these experiences with anticipation. Often we would see a ship pass by there at an altitude of some 500 feet, flashing bright beacons of light, bombarding the whole area with them, and discharging a thick fog of bluish color with silver sparks. The communications recommended that we should carry out our work of instruction in those irradiated and positively charged places, which consisted of an acceleration of vibrations and activation of our potential for extrasensorial perception by means of certain exercises. Upon finishing the exercises, the pressure in the nape of the neck and forehead showed us the intensity of its realization. At the same time we had to remove our coats for the intense heat we felt and which lasted several days. Another detail of those trips was that we returned from them glowing with a phosphorescence that, as was said, soon disappeared and was gone by the following morning. This place, located near kilometer 58 of the Pan-American Highway south, and a few kilometers east, toward the mountains, would serve during the following 4 months as an adequate site for the practices of preparation, which required silence and solitude. One by one the uncounted trips were causing us to disc over the existence of a preconceived plan, in which nothing we had lived had been of casual being, but was programmed by the cosmic hierarchies. So that our egos would not inflate us with pride, we amended each other in a permanent way, that it was them who had made the contact possible, and that before, during and after us, the contacts had existed with hundreds of thousands of persons, looking for a reaction similar of that produced in us. It has been difficult during all those years to maintain an attitude of humility to give us guidance and acceptance of the rules and directions, not denying that more than once we had lost the trail, above all when we had succumbed to pride and vanity. The secret seemed to be in not losing sight of the goal to be achieved, as well as our condition as simple conscious instruments, putting aside our own interests and personal ambitions. We are like a tube, which by itself is useless, except as a connection of one part to another, integrating all and allowing passage through it. There is no merit in completing the assigned function without freely accepting our road and the requirements it entails. For the additional instruction which we have received up to this moment, in other existences, in other the opportunity of being conscious and being able to use planes of evolution, We are reminded that we are here because we have not been greater in other lives, since as we know, we are the product of our past existences. But certainly we have gained some merit to have been given our liberty to fortify our will when confronted by the tests. We were selected from among the commonest of the people, reminding us that from the simplest are those called to a service that disorients those considered most intelligent. The dimension of human contacts like this is found to make man rediscover his lost values, and above all his fellow beings, through which the spirit of the Creator is made more accessible. Each one must labor, with much force and sacrifice, for a place in the mission of salvation of the human races and the survival of man on the face of the earth. This appendix was extracted from a 311-page book, Los Guias Extraterrestres y la Misión Rama, by Sixto Paz Wells. The book, according to the express orders of the guides, is never to be sold, but is given freely to all who order it. We recommend a donation to cover printing and postage so that the books may continue to be given to all who seek this kind of information. This version is printed in Spanish in Peru. Send your donation and mailing address for the book to Asociación Civil Misión Rama, APTO. Postal 1561 Lima 100, Lima, Peru. The book is illustrated with some remarkable photographs taken during the experiences described. This appendix was added to this work because it tends to confirm a lot of what Professor Hernandez was being told, and the confirmation comes from an entirely different group of contacting a different group of Earth humans, in another country and place, who at the time the two accounts were being set down in writing could not have heard of each other nor the other's contacts taking place at the same times. There are other similar contacts also taking place at this time elsewhere on our planet, equally unrelated, but also discussing the same or similar things. This ought to be something of interest to a whole lot more people, because after all, it is us who are most affected by the events. Another point of particular interest here is that the groups, like the Andromedan groups, and the Pleiadian groups, and the Ummah groups, are carrying out operations all over our world, and have other contactees, unknown to each other, who are all being influenced to work toward a master plan to save enough of the human species of this planet, not contaminated by the dangerous ills of our aberrant society, to preserve the species lines for another opportunity to complete the evolution of our races at a better time and place. Must the bulk of us fail? Surely if we allow ourselves to be swept up in the suicidal destiny we have planned for ourselves and our beautiful blue planet. If enough of the beings do not want what we have planned, we can reverse the process and get control of the monsters we have created, and then many more could survive into a glorious new age.